Just going to run this dog to see if we can find any type of human remains that are left.
Listen to Where Secrets Go to Die, The Disappearance of Derek Hennigan. From the Detroit Free Press, a new podcast set in the woods of Michigan's Upper Peninsula. Available on Apple, Spotify, Freep.com, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey folks, Zach Osterman here, IU Insider, Indianapolis Star. It is Wednesday, January 4th. It is Wednesday, right?
I have no idea what the calendar is anymore. I'm starting to reattenuate,
like back to work. I think we all sort of, you know, like the when you set the first alarm. I mean, don't get me wrong, and that's Chronic Hoosier on the other end. This is Mind Your Banners. You know, when my kids were going back to daycare, it was like, this is great. But on the other hand, when you set that first alarm, it was, oh, okay. So that's what this comes with. So he is Chronic Hoosier. It is the new year. Happy New Year, everyone. And this is Mind Your Banners. We are Chronic. We're both wearing home field. And we're both
good
here.
Brand.
We're both here to talk about Indiana basketball. And I want to talk about Indiana kind of as it fits into the Big Ten. Because ultimately, it's been a long layoff. I think we kind of picked the bones out of Kansas. I don't think anybody is really that interested in too much a dissection of Elon or Kennesaw State. But Indiana's had this long layoff here, during which time the conference has developed a little bit around them. But it struck me, talking to my boss, Matt Glenesk, yesterday, KenPom's projections have Ohio State and Purdue each finishing 14-6, Rutgers finishing 13-7, Wisconsin, Michigan, and I believe Indiana finishing, excuse me, Indiana finishing 12-8, Wisconsin and Michigan finishing 11-9, and then 1, 2, 3, 4 teams finishing 10-10 in the conference. You know, you can be skeptical or optimistic about any of these teams, but it does feel like this is the Big Ten we thought we were getting, especially if you accept, and I'm not disrespecting Purdue, but maybe as someone who's seen Arizona up close, who's seen Kansas up close, Purdue maybe not quite be at that level right now. It's a conference that's deep. It's a conference without maybe one true elite team. It's a conference that is very open, and it may well be 13 wins that wins this thing.
Well, that very well could be. This is that shaping up to be a fascinating year. Maybe not a league that's going to be particularly top heavy. I say that with Purdue just surrendering the number one ranking, likely in the upcoming polls after the home loss to Rutgers. But one that's very, very deep in the middle. And I think for Indiana, a team that started the season, preseason pick by most accounts, most outlets, media, coaches, I believe, too, if I'm not mistaken. Did they even vote on that? Or am I just...
What are we... The coaches poll?
Yeah. Coaches preseason?
The coaches vote on it.
There were some winks
off camera. It's the coaches in parentheses SIDs poll.
Yes, yes. But for a season where Indiana was projected to finish atop the league, I think a lot of Indiana fans, myself included right now, while certainly optimistic, probably have a lot more doubts, maybe not doubts, questions about the legitimacy of that bid. But the thing with this new conference schedule where you get Indiana at least got a couple games, Iowa just got two under their belt since Christmas, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah.
Losses to Nebraska and Penn State. Now it begins in earnest. Now the slog truly begins. Mike Woodson, like myself, didn't seem to be a huge fan of nearly a two-week break in the schedule. But time will tell if that wasn't what Indiana needed as far as healing some of its wounds, some of its injuries, and sharpening up a little bit. Because with the sample set, they've had one win, one loss in conference so far. A couple of marquee wins, a couple of real less than impressive marquee losses. Now it's time to figure out who the Hoosiers really are. And I think there's a lot of promise. There's certainly some problems, not the least of which being the injury to Xavier Johnson, the unknown status at this time of Trace Jackson Davis having just returned to practice Monday, if I'm not mistaken, of this week, for the first time at least.
Yeah, I think contact practice, yes, which yes. is one of those things that, like, I mean, let's start with Indiana, and then we'll widen our gaze to the Big Ten.
Health, yeah, I totally derailed that one.
No, health is a big piece of this conversation for Indiana. Trace Jackson Davis, it sounds like, has been really limited through this holiday break. Now, it's worth saying, a lot like a bowl practice or a spring practice or a bye week in football. The football version of Trace Jackson Davis, a big offensive tackle, would not do much contact work in spring practice.
Right.
You don't need him to. He doesn't need – it's reps he doesn't need. It's contact he doesn't need. It's wear and tear he doesn't need. So, where kind of the line is between Trace can't do this and we don't need Trace to do this, that's kind of the question I think that Mike Woodson sort of artfully dodged when we talked to him on Tuesday. He said, yes, that Trace would be back. I think it was actually Tuesday. I think he said he'd be back in contact like today and then tomorrow, Tuesday and Wednesday, building up to Iowa on Thursday. There's kind of been the question about maybe the back injury that's never really been specified. Obviously, he had the thumb earlier in the year that seems to be clearing up. I think the question you have with Trace is basically Xavier Johnson's out for a while, if not a meaningful chunk of the rest of the year. Jalen Huchefino, this layoff will probably have done him some good. He obviously played the last three games, but we know he'd been dealing with a back issue. The question you have with Trace is basically these limitations that Indiana's kind of put on him, not playing him in the two games before Christmas, not practicing him heavily until right before the build-up back to Big Ten play. Is it because he can't do it, or is it because Indiana just says, we don't need him to? He's been nursing some stuff. Let's just let him rest, and maybe we can get him to a place where, like, he doesn't need a pain-killing injection to play in a big game the way that we know he did against, I think, North Carolina. So it from Indiana's perspective, health is a big part of this because you've already lost one of your point guards. Now, as I've said numerous times, and other people have too, most teams aren't fortunate enough to have two Big Ten point guards, two Big Ten quality point guards. Indiana's got one that it can turn to, but now it's only got one when it had two. And then obviously your All-American big man, nothing, you don't accomplish anything without, this season without him. I think one of the questions that lingers around Indiana is just basically, which side of the spectrum does Trace Jackson Davis sort of lean more toward? Is it more just like, hey, we don't need to, or is it, hey, he can't with regard to his injury and the rest they're giving him?
And that's, I don't think that's something that was super, was so much of the uncertainty without having a definitive diagnosis as far as what they're treating. So much of it, not knowing when he picked it up, when it began in earnest. He's had the wrap on for the better part of the season, the back. When exactly did that develop? Because, when you look at performances.
I think the suggestion was it was a fall in the Miami of Ohio game possibly, or some kind of contact playing against Miami. Either Xavier, Miami of Ohio was somewhere where he picked it up.
Right on. Because the Trace we saw in November, let me rephrase that, far more effective rather than perhaps the Trace we saw in December. Figuring out where Trace is in January, I think, is going to be really the key to the castle for the Hoosiers going forward. With the second key being, how do they manage the backcourt with Xavier Johnson's absence? We just learned that Tamar Bates is going to be entering into the starting lineup, who's really come on strong here in December. I feel like he gives Indiana a lot more scoring options. Perhaps helps with the spacing a little bit more, certainly provides a little more deep threat, while also allowing Trey Galloway to kind of be that energy guy that comes up off the bench. So they've got to find a new rhythm. All those things being said, they're going to have to figure out, and you got the sense that Indiana was just starting to settle into some of that, and then some of the turbulence of December happens. With conference play starting here in just, a matter of hours, 36 or so, late start time tomorrow night. Where is Indiana as it starts the Big Ten season in earnest? I always have to keep conditioning that. It still doesn't feel like Big Ten season starts, first week of December, but here we are, at least for two games for Indiana. But now that they get into the teeth of it, it's going to be really interesting to see what this team's identity is, how they clean up some of the issues that Woodson has complained about, largely being turnovers and toughness. As a couple of their Achilles heels that have shown themselves, and how can they continue to build on the offensive efficiency that they've been growing throughout the course of the season, and what corrections can be made defensively to tighten things up and get back as close as possible to the stifling defense that we saw them play last season.
Talk about Bates. I think that you know, I mean, I wrote before the break that he should start, that it was time to give him his time to give him a run. His numbers to this point in the season, just kind of very quickly to I don't know, update people, I guess, for lack of a better term. He is averaging right now almost 21 minutes a game. He's primarily scoring. He is averaging 2.3 assists per game, which is not bad. But it's not, it's obviously not a huge number. He's averaging 8.5 points. Wait, are these numbers? These numbers can't be right. These numbers are not updated. Come on, Indiana basketball. Indiana is not updating. It's, forgive me.
I got burned on that earlier this season. I quoted something that I pulled off the team stat page. Everybody's like,
"Yeah, no, this is no." It says he has 35 points this season. He's scored 35 points in his last. Let's just go to his KenPom page. Forget his per game averages. he's 25 of 38 on twos. He's 20 of 48 on threes, which is 41.7%. His turnover rate is only 15.1%. His assist rate is 11.7%. He has one of the best effective field goal numbers on the team, if not the best effective field goal number on the team, because of his three-point shooting and because he has become a volume three-point shooter. He has shot almost as many threes this season as Miller Kopp, despite the fact that Miller Kopp has played a higher percentage of Indiana's minutes. And listen, Kopp should be shooting those threes too. He's shooting 44.6%. But my point is, Bates has been coming off the bench rather than starting. He's been playing fewer minutes per game than Kopp, and he's still almost at the same volume from a three-point perspective. If you look at Hoop Lens, which does a really good job of kind of breaking down basically like, you know, team performance while a certain player's on the floor, he has the best offensive points per possession number of any guard on the team in terms of when they are on the floor, how is the offense performing. Now, again, sometimes that can be a little that is if you sort of remove anyone who has played under like 250 possessions. So right. Anybody who has been a consistent member of the rotation throughout the 13 games Indiana's played this year
kind of takes out the garbage time minutes.
Yeah, he is behind only Jordan Geronimo because Caleb Banks doesn't fit that either. 1.13 points per possession Indiana scores when he's on the floor. That's very good. Particularly for a guard, because guards can tend to trend a little bit more inefficient. it speaks to the extent to which I think, you know, everybody's hesitant to do this, and I'm not suggesting you should just jump in with both feet on Tamar Bates. You know, you're not going to get 19 points per game out of him the rest of the way. He's averaging 9.2 points, 2.2 rebounds, and 1.5 assists per game. He's going to struggle again. But I think that there's, you know, there's a little bit of needing to wash the taste of last season out of your mouth with Bates. If you look at what he's been, particularly, he scored 22 against Jackson State. He had 19 against Nebraska. He had 13 against Arizona and 19 against Kennesaw State. Basically, since kind of the end of November, he has turned into the sort of multi-level scorer we thought he could be. Coming out of IMG, and he's not a direct replacement for Xavier Johnson, but I think the arguments for starting him are, number one, if you move Trey Galloway back to the bench, you get his bench impact. You also get to distribute the point guard minutes a little bit more evenly because Galloway is sort of the de facto backup point guard right now with Johnson out. But when you bring Bates in, you bring layers of offensive sort of threat. And he's not Johnson. He's a different kind of player because you can't replace Xavier Johnson. What you can do is go find somebody who does something different. I've made the 2016 season comparison a lot. Nobody could replace James Blackman Jr. What you could do is you could go find Rob Johnson, do something a little bit different, Colin Hartman do something a little bit different, OG Anunoby do something a little bit different, and change your team profile, but in so doing, bring out somebody else's skills. It just feels like Tamar Bates is ready for this opportunity. It's not to say he's not going to have another bad performance like his 1 of 7 at Rutgers, but I think Indiana needs to be a lot better defensively. And if you look at some of those, you know, sort of while they're on the court metrics defensively, Bates doesn't rate as highly in those. He needs to be better defensively. But I think Indiana just needs to look at a player like that and say, we need quantity from his quality at this point.
You know, for all the things the stats show on his maturation this season, I think for me the biggest thing is the confidence that he's playing with, his willingness to seek shots, not necessarily taking them I don't want to say out of desperation.
Multi-level scorer, though. I mean, like, yeah. we talked about this a lot last year, that it seemed like he could score off the bounce. It seemed like he could create his own shot. Like I said he was like a Parker Stewart plus because he could make those spot-up threes, but it seemed like he could create his own shot. Now he's making them.
Now he's fulfilling that role that everybody's wanted from that two guard. The expectation on Parker Stewart last year was, you know, try to create some off the dribble, but you absolutely got to be able to knock down jump shots when they're available. It's essential, both from a scoring perspective, from a spacing perspective, which this team is going to desperately increasingly need as we continue to see defenses get more creative with the tactics they're employing to frustrate Trayce Jackson-Davis and to kind of clog up the post. You've got to be able to make them pay when they keep trapping and collapsing down on the bigs like they do. Tamar seems up for the challenge so far, and he certainly does need to improve defensively, but I think you can make the case for probably most people on the roster at this point in the season, at least most that are currently available for Indiana. And where I had always assumed that was going to kind of be Woodson's default setting in making roster choices. I think he's also reached the point this year where he's recognized with X's injury, somebody's got to be able to go out there and stir the drink. Somebody's got to be able to go out there and throw some daggers when needed. And while Miller Kopp's resurgence this year has certainly been a welcome sight, you got to get it from another guard. And with X being out right now, I feel like Trey has played his play has been improved considerably this year. It's the consistency that Indiana has struggled with from a scoring standpoint. And at this point in the season, it seems like Tamar certainly gives you the best option as far as getting some buckets, quite frankly.
Yeah, I mean, again, like I think one of the important points you make there is this doesn't happen if Trayce Jackson or if Xavier Johnson is healthy.
Right.
He's not starting if Xavier Johnson is healthy. He's still coming off the bench. But Xavier Johnson is out for a substantial period of time. I don't want to speculate. Maybe it is even the season, or at least so much of it that by the time he gets back, his impact is going to have to be compartmentalized. The point is, you've got to reframe then, if you're Mike Woodson, the question of what's our best five and how do we get it together. Tamar Bates makes a lot of sense next to Jalen Hood-Schifino. He shoots 50% on two-point jumpers, and that's not like a soft number. He's 12 of 24. And, you know, these numbers, this is per hoop math, like these numbers can be a little dodgy because, like, it's got Trayce Jackson-Davis with 24 two-point jumpers. It's got Race Thompson with 26, and obviously those are probably just sort of, you know, extended hooks, you know, shots that we would consider in the paint. But Tamar Bates, I'm guessing most of these 24 attempts are true jump shots, and he's hit half of them. Miller Kopp has hit 11 of 16. That's quietly been a piece of his game that's improved, is his mid-range. It makes a lot of sense next to a player like Jalen Hood-Schifino when you suddenly have to look at him a lot more. And I think Hood-Schifino's quietly gotten better offensively. I mean, he's like 11-24 on threes basically in every game he's played except his first two this season. But when you have to look at Jalen Hood-Schifino and say, we need you to put more of your energy into being the creator and more of your energy into getting everybody else involved, and it's, you know, there aren't going to be a lot of nights where you can drift off the ball and go get your offense somewhere else, where maybe there could have been when Xavier Johnson was healthy. You need guys that can give you points from different angles and points that can threaten a defense and pull a defense apart. With their presence from different spots on the floor, not just one or two or three, not just, you know, around the perimeter, but in the way they move all over. And I think Bates, you know, his offensive instincts are clearly good. You can see the offseason work he's done with his shot, his mechanics, and also just kind of the flow, especially when he's shooting off the dribble. I'm trying to find the number of his assisted two-point jumpers. Only 8.3%. of his two-point jump shots are attempted. So most of that, are attempted. They just go in.
Only 8%
of
them.
It's the miracle of Christmas. That only 8.3% are assisted. So most of those are off the bounce. Mm-hmm. Most of those shots are coming off the dribble. He's creating those for himself. You've got to layer pieces around Jalen Hood-Schifino that make it easier for Hood-Schifino as a point guard, and also easier for Hood-Schifino as a player, just as an offensive player, to say, I can get downhill. What am I good at? I'm good in the mid-range. I'm good at getting downhill. I'm good at finishing around the rim. Well, you gotta put guys out there that if suddenly a lot of that's on Hood-Schifino with the ball in his hands rather than moving off the ball, You got to put guys out there that space the floor well for him too. And Trey Galloway's three-point shot has improved, and I don't think that this move is about what Trey Galloway hasn't done. I think it's about what Tamar Bates has done. Mm-hmm. And again, I think it's also a little bit of balancing the rotations. Galloway, I think, is almost going to be a de facto starter by his minutes these next few weeks. But at the same time, putting another three-point shooter on the floor next to Jalen Hood-Schifino just makes his life easier. So there's the element of this that is Tamar Bates has gotten a lot better offensively. There's also the element of this that is you have a talented point guard, but a freshman point guard nonetheless. You need to make his life as easy as possible. Tamar Bates makes a lot of sense as a two guard next to Jalen Hood-Schifino.
And, you know, alongside all those things that you mentioned on Jalen Hood-Schifino's plate right now, I'm looking at him to step it up defensively in Xavier Johnson's absence as Big Ten play starts. For an Indiana team that has struggled a lot here recently in defending the three-point shots, in defending the point of attack, keeping themselves in position, keeping their shape, if you will, keeping themselves out of defensive rotations, it's going to have to start with Fino. I think he gives you a little bit more defensive capability at up top. And with X sitting now, somebody's going to have to be able to set the tone in that backcourt from the defensive side. So in addition to everything else that Woodson's going to ask of him offensively, he's going to have to figure out how to make his mark on the defensive end if Indiana's going to have a chance to compete. So I think by putting Bates out there and taking a little bit more load off of him offensively off the ball, I think maybe gives him a little bit more leg for the other side of the floor when they get back on defense as well.
Defense is kind of the thing. I mean, from a statistical perspective, I think defense is maybe the biggest reason to doubt this team insofar as defense was the reason it felt like you could buy into Indiana as the preseason Big Ten favorite. They had the best defense in the conference last season, not just overall, but in a conference-only basis. They had some stinkers, and I think what you were counting on was them eliminating the Michigans, the Illinois, you know, Michigan State, where they go up to Michigan State. And Michigan State, actually, they're not terrible defensively in that game. But they still do allow 1.07 points per possession. You were counting on them getting a little bit better defensively while eliminating some of the just sort of defensive no-shows. The second half against Iowa is another good example in Iowa City. And timely, of course, with Indiana going to Iowa City tomorrow night. I do think what's interesting to me is that if you look at their defensive profile, there's other than not forcing a ton of turnovers, and even that, I mean, they're top 100 in opponent turnover percentage. Their defensive profile is good, broadly speaking. They're 25th in opponent two-point percentage. They're 10th in block percentage. They're 141st in opponent three-point percentage, but opponents are only hitting 32.5% against them, so that's not bad. They're 21st in adjusted efficiency. All this is KenPom. They're top 100 in all four factors defensively: opponent effective field goal percentage, opponent turnover percentage, opponent offensive rebounding percentage, opponent free throw rate. They're top 100 in every single one of those. What's interesting to me is it felt like something different, and I've hammered at this in different ways in the last few weeks. I would be curious for your thoughts. It felt like something different kind of abandoned them in each of these games. You know, Rutgers, it was the offensive rebounds, particularly in the first half. I know the run comes in the second half, but the terms of that game are set in the first half when Indiana just cannot clear the glass.
Yep.
Against Arizona, it's just kind of straight up the ability to string stops together. And you know, listen, that's what Arizona does to people. They are the number one offense in the country. I got in some trouble for what I said, or I got some criticism for what I said about, you know, maybe feeling like they were scratching their ceiling a little bit too much right now. We'll see how the Pac-12 prepares them for March. But they could not get stops in that game. For a team that wants to be elite defensively, you've got to find a way if you want to consider yourself that good. And then against Kansas, a lot of things went wrong, but primarily it was basically transition defense and putting yourself in way too many. You know, turnovers aren't a direct reflection of defense, but they directly impact defense because you put yourself in too many sort of three on twos, two on ones, two on nones, those sorts of situations. What strikes me in general is that because it doesn't feel like there is one common thread in these three defeats, other than just that Indiana lost and lost comfortably. It just sort of feels like Indiana is still coming to grips with what's required at the level that Indiana wants to perform at from a consistency perspective. We hear Mike Woodson talk about that a lot. You know, he talks about toughness, but he also talks about consistency. I use this comparison all the time. Somebody told me once that the difference between a footballer in England who plays in the other than like the five or six just absolutely world-class stars in the Premier League, the difference between the average Premier League player and the average player two rungs down in League One, you know, two divisions down where you get relegated, isn't skill. It's not, oh, he can do that and he can't do that. Again, other than the absolute upper crust, it's not skill, it's consistency.
It's the little things it's done that, really well consistently.
It's that he, you know, this player's in the Premier League because he can do it 29 times out of 30 or 39 times out of 40 or whatever. This player can only do it 4 out of 10. Or this player can only do it 11 out of 20. And that's why he's down there, is because he can't be counted on to perform at that. He can hit that level, but he can't be counted on to perform at it as consistently as the player that is getting the Premier League paycheck week after week after week. And that's not just at the good teams. That's up and down the division. It feels, and it shouldn't maybe be too surprising, because this is a team that ultimately, you know, we talked so much last season, there was no player on this team that had ever been to the NCAA tournament. And I don't totally subscribe to this theory that, like, Indiana should have added a transfer that came from a winning program because those winning habits would rub off. I mean, like, sometimes that can happen, but you've already got a team here that's got a really sort of structured and defined leadership hierarchy. You know, throwing somebody else in you can't just go find somebody from like Duke or North Carolina and be like, ah, yes, tell us how they do it at North Carolina, but you're also the 11th man on our bench and you're never going to play. Like, it's not that simple. But I do think that this team is still trying to figure out, like, basically how to find that best version of itself every night. And I think that's, again, when you bought into Indiana as a preseason favorite in the Big Ten, you did so still recognizing that they were having growing pains of their own. None of us were saying Indiana was the finished article on November 1st. And this is where I think Indiana is not the finished product. And maybe they don't get there. I'm not guaranteeing they will. But this idea of Indiana finding its way to being, to understanding even 15 of the 20 nights, 15 of your 20 Big Ten games, some version of your best selves on the floor. You do that, you're going to win 13, 14 games. You're going to be in the mix for the Big Ten title. This team, I think, is still figuring that out.
Yeah, I think this team is still trying to figure out where to turn when they need to answer a call. And we saw it at Rutgers. We saw it at Las Vegas against Arizona. We saw it in Lawrence. There's going to come a time in every game for the remainder of the season where they're going to get punched in the mouth, and you've got to have the will to fight back. Somebody's got to step up and take that punch and give it back, I should say. It can't just be Trace. We've seen what I think will be a continuing pattern here for most of the rest of the year, ways in which teams are going to just throw the kitchen sink at him defensively and really try to neutralize you know, his All-American skills. Somebody else is going to have to be there. Probably somebody's else is going to have to be able to fill in those voids.
Like attorneys general.
Yes. The void fillers, LLC. No, Indiana's got to find that part of its identity, because when Woodson talks about toughness, when Woodson talks about consistency, you know, it's all well and good to go romp. You know, even against a good team like North Carolina, when you're, you know, playing in front of a raucous crowd and everything's warm and fuzzy, when you get down on the road, when the calls aren't going your way, you know, when you find yourself in a slump, you're giving up a run, who's going to be there to stop it? And when we saw that in Las Vegas in particular, you know, when things got tough, that stretch early in the first half, everything that could go wrong seemed to go wrong for Indiana. And you could see it in the body language, guys just looking across the floor, trying to figure out who was going to be the guy that stops the slide. And unfortunately, it just kept going until the game was pretty much out of reach, even though they were able to throw some punches later in the game. It just, they put themselves in too deep of a hole. You got that very same taste in Kansas early on in that game. And, you know, to your point about, you know, what separates these players at this level, sometimes it's as simple as knocking down an open jump shot when it hits you. But more often it's as simple as making the good pass. And I mean good passes, pocket passes, hitting shooters in a shooting position instead of making them get out of their stance, reach, get off their spot for the ball, fighting through the screens on the defensive end, boxing out. All those little things that add up to big things at the conclusion of the game. It takes toughness to do that. It takes toughness to do that on a night-to-night basis, but especially when you start getting in those situations that aren't so comfortable for you, whether it be on the road, whether it be playing from a deficit or what have you, or as Indiana's experiencing now, playing without some of your key guys on the floor. Stuff's going to happen. That's a given. Things are going to be hard in the Big Ten. Who's going to be there to answer the bell when it rings? Because Indiana's going to need several bodies beyond just Trace Jackson Davis, quite frankly.
We're going to live dangerously for about 5 or 6 minutes here because I have got zero battery meter left in the recorder. So if this cuts off suddenly, know that Bloomington was not wiped out in a nuclear attack. At least that's a lot less likely than the batteries running out. But just a quick snapshot of the Big Ten. Three teams are still undefeated. Wisconsin 3-0, Ohio State 2-0, Michigan 2-0. I don't know what to make of Michigan. Nobody does. Purdue is 2-1, Rutgers 2-1, Michigan State 2-1, Penn State 2-1, Indiana and Northwestern each 1-1, Maryland, Nebraska 1-2, 1-3, Illinois is 0-2, so I'm regretting picking Illinois to win the league right now. Iowa's 0-3, Minnesota's 0-3. Minnesota is bad. Like, Minnesota's just flatly bad. Everybody else is KenPom top 100, is net top 100.
Yep.
That's where I come back to. Number one, if you're Indiana, all you really got to do is avoid losing at Minnesota, and there's not necessarily a bad loss left on you. I mean, even like a Northwestern at home, like, you don't want it, but you could live with it.
You take Northwestern and Minnesota at the whole league's top, KenPom top 50 right now.
Is it?
Yep.
Is that right?
Yep.
Iowa is right there at 50. Is Nebraska higher than Iowa?
Nebraska is.
No, Nebraska's 88.
Oh, I'm but sorry. Still, I'm looking at who's left on the schedule.
But, like, I mean, Nebraska's, yep. Nebraska has is right on the cut line. I mean, a quad two win at home for Indiana right now. That should give you an idea. Again, maybe the top line isn't there, but the depth of this league. And so it's going to be challenging. It's going to challenge a team that we are saying, can you be your consistent best every single night? But on the other hand, I mean, this is a league where you go 11-9 in this league, you are going to have fistfuls of quad one and two wins. And all you got to do is pick off, you know, even like a Northwestern on the road, a Michigan on the road, like games that on paper right now on January 4th look doable. Pick off one of those and it's going to be a quality win to go with the ones you already have in the non-conference. This is a conference that should still feed all of Indiana's ambitions if Indiana can get off to a good start. And I mean, it's going to be fascinating. You're their first six back, their first seven are at Iowa, Northwestern, at Penn State, Wisconsin, at Illinois, Michigan State, at Minnesota. Their win percentage probabilities per KenPom in those seven games are 52, 77, 49, 73, 45, 71, and 84. So basically toss up or better for Indiana in those first seven games coming back. This is a conference that, as I said a minute ago, to me, can feed all of Indiana's ambitions if Indiana has the wherewithal to realize them.
No, absolutely. You know, one thing Indiana has going forward as the season starts, or I keep saying as the season starts, as we get into the teeth of the Big Ten season, Indiana and Ohio State, the only two teams in the league yet to surrender a loss at home right now. Which Woodson's preached since he got here. That's going to be one of his calling cards, is you've got to take care of your house. And I think it's going to be imperative for every team, but especially for Indiana this year, if those aspirations are to come or to be realized, rather. And then you're going to have to figure out a way to find the toughness to steal some wins on the road. Because you look at that Purdue-Rutgers game the other night. That's it right there, man. That's exactly how you have to win in this league, is just fearlessly in one of the best environments. You got to have guys on your team that are going to answer the call and take those shots. And this, I think, where Indiana's experience hopefully gives it a little bit of a fighting chance in some of those instances. And perhaps sometimes having guys that haven't been there, they don't have the fear as well. So we'll see what becomes of it. But the order is tall if Indiana's going to have a chance to compete, because there's going to be a lot of really good road environments ahead for them.
And I think that you go back to these first seven. I mean, four of those seven are on the road. Now, that's Iowa without the students. That's Penn State, which Penn State's really good right now. I mean, give Penn State its flowers. That's a good-looking team. But absolutely, that's obviously not a tough road environment necessarily. Illinois will be tough, and then it's Minnesota. So it's not the tough environments, but for your first seven on the road does sort of, again, throw you back into a little bit. And on the other hand, throw you some opportunities. You beat an Iowa on the road. Iowa's vulnerable right now. We know Patrick McCaffrey, who we hope is certainly doing okay and is going to get everything out of this break he's taking from basketball. That is much more important than talking about any matchup on the floor, but it will affect this Indiana now facing an Iowa team that's 0-3 in the league and shorthanded one of their better players.
I see him as dangerous as all get out right
now. No, I mean, and that's fair. I think I would think Iowa was more dangerous. And I don't want to get too into any one matchup, but I would think Iowa was more dangerous if students were there.
No, absolutely. I think you can make that case for any gym.
Yeah, sure. But I think they would be more dangerous in their current setting if you could get some juice and some energy from the students. I mean, you even look at, like, Northwestern's going to be tough at home. I mean, like, yep. Like Northwestern's not rolling over for people. I mean, they are, at the moment, they're 10-3, and their only three losses are Auburn, Pitt, and Pitt, by the way, like, I know Pitt's been a figure of fun, but they won five in a row, and they're 4-0 in the ACC, and Ohio State on the road. I mean, you know, Northwestern's beaten Liberty, which is a top 70 KenPom team. They've beaten Michigan State on the road. So, I mean, this, you know, they represent as well as anyone. This league is kind of wonky right now, and there's not an easy night. On the other hand, there also aren't a lot of games that you would look at and say Indiana is – just cannot win this game. You know, there's just you can't see your way to Indiana winning X game. Like, I mean, I'm looking down their schedule. I think you've got to get as far as maybe Michigan State away, even then Purdue away, and that's February 25th before I find a game where I'm just like, where I just say there's absolutely no way, bar somebody going nuts and somebody playing awful, I think Indiana can win this game. And I think that there's a real chance. You know, we talked about how difficult we felt like Indiana's schedule was in the Big Ten. As these things so often happen, the schedule we see in May, June, July, August is not the schedule they wind up facing in the winter. You know, I think this is a league that is going to be won by somebody that finds a way to win five or six in a row.
Yep.
That somebody, it's like that one team separates itself early, or maybe not early, but just somewhere along the way finds a way to win a bunch of these coin toss games and hold serve at home. Like, if you're Indiana and you hold serve at home, and that's not an unrealistic expectation at all. You know, that's 19 wins by itself, no matter what else you do on the road. And that probably puts you in position at worst to finish about 12-8 in the conference. It just feels like if, you know, I don't mean to keep leaning on the 2016 comparison, but that team starts 7-0 in the Big Ten. It's not an impressive 7-0 start, but it is 7-0. It gets them off on the right foot. It helps them fix some things. It feels like this league is going to be won by a team that can build that kind of stretch somewhere into its schedule, where it just tears off a bunch of wins, hits the front, and makes everybody chase in a really sort of uncertain and cloudy conference. And I'm not guaranteeing that could be Indiana, but I think Indiana has the capacity to be that team.
Well, I think Indiana, using that analogy, you look at how January sets up versus February in conference. I think it would behoove them to make as much hay as they can early, because February, the degree of difficulty is going to increase. That hill gets a whole lot steeper to climb. And you don't want to see yourself in a position where, you know, when you're needing to stack those wins late, you take a couple of losses and now all of a sudden the air goes out of the building. Give yourself some cushion where it's available, I think, in January, and then deal with the Purdue, Rutgers, Michigan, stretch that you start that month with, because things can turn in a hurry once you get into that portion of the schedule, I feel like.
That's another, I mean, again, another comparison, 2016. If you turn that schedule around on them, I don't think there's any way they win the Big Ten.
Yep.
Because February was incredibly difficult, but January let them fix some things, push them forward even after James Blackman Jr.'s injury, and gave them a platform to really attack February. And once they did, they beat Purdue at home, they beat Iowa at home and on the road, they beat Maryland at home, they won a big game at Michigan. Well, they won big at Michigan against a Michigan team on a bit of a dip, and that's what got them through. I mean, any other thoughts on the Big Ten? I think it's fascinating because there was all this like, oh, the Big Ten's demise was overstated, or you know, the you know, the Big Ten isn't as bad as... I don't think we thought the Big Ten would be bad. I just think we thought the Big Ten would be this.
Yeah.
It would be very deep. There maybe would not be... Maybe there'd be one or maybe two. Hey, listen, maybe... I mean, maybe there are a couple teams that separate and get back into that top 10, top 8. You know, I think Purdue will exist there all year and has the capacity to make a deep tournament run. Maybe another team will join them. But what we said is that the top end doesn't look like it's going to be quite as strong, but the league is going to be deep. And there's going to be enough when you go, you know, team by team between players and coaches and what you know, what guys have done, what they've put on film, what they've put on their resumes, that the bottom's not just going to fall out of the league. And it's going to be one that is going to take a while to really mature, but it's not a bad league. It's just an uncertain league. And that's what I think we're still seeing, you know, heading here into the I mean, I guess Big Ten play's already restarted, but certainly the meat of the Big Ten schedule.
I'm going to continue to trip over that for the rest of my existence. It's just the way it's going to be.
Yeah, well, but I mean, I think, but my point is it's we've already restarted. Yep. I mean, like you said earlier, Iowa's already played two games since the new year. Maybe that's an advantage for Iowa. We'll see.
I'll tell you what, my big thing for Indiana heading into January ball, I'm still really curious to see who this team is, what their identity is. Show me your soul, if you will. This is the time to prove it. This is the time to cement your identity. This is the time to basically put your name on it and to define what that means to other teams in the league. And I think the way the schedule sets up for Indiana, particularly with a road game against a, you know, perhaps a vulnerable Iowa team at home, with the advantages that we just discussed, now's the time to seize it. And conversely, if they don't, I think we see perhaps some of those flaws materialize.
It's a canary in the coal mine kind of start.
No, absolutely.
For Indiana.
Absolutely. So let's see who they are. This is a great opportunity, I think, for them to prove it. And I can't wait to stay up till the wee hours of the night watching basketball from Iowa City.
As a programming note, I will not be in Iowa City or State College. Just unfortunate preseason figuring out where to best marshal our resources. Those were two trips that we moved off the schedule early on. But we will be on the road with Indiana the rest of the way. We will obviously have a lot more to talk about. This has been Mind Your Banners.
Real quick, programming note too. We started the podcast by mentioning we're both wearing some fine home field apparel.
Yeah.
I just got a DM from Connor.
Yeah.
There's some drip coming that I'm not going to lie. My heart rate.
If Connor wants to throw the podcast some money, we'll be happy to talk more about the drip.
I just got a direct message me salivate.
Is it the Tulane joggers? Because if it's not the Tulane joggers, I have no interest.
I got two hoodies, a crew, and I got some script joggers.
Yeah, I'm sorry. You watch that Cotton Bowl? Tulane joggers. Tulane joggers are good out of here. This is
there's a rose on one of the hoodies too.
Is that the Utah one?
No. These are all Indiana.
Oh, it's all Indiana stuff. Well, there you go. Homefieldapparel.com. And Connor, I know you're listening. You know, maybe get into Liverpool gear at some point soon. He is Chronic Hoosier. I'm Zach Osterman. This has been Mind Your Banners for January 4th, 2023 for the Indianapolis Star, for the Bloomington Herald Times. Thank you so much for listening. We made it to the...
Just kidding. Happy New
Year. We made it to the end. Happy New Year, everybody.
Just going to run this dog to see if we can find any type of human remains that are left.
Listen to Where Secrets Go to Die, The Disappearance of Derek Hennigan. From the Detroit Free Press, a new podcast set in the woods of Michigan's Upper Peninsula. Available on Apple, Spotify, Freep.com, or wherever you get your podcasts.